Say hello.
Good morning and welcome to the May 15, 2019 Cambria Community Healthcare District meeting at an unusual 10 a.m. due to a combination of factors. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation. Under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Right.
We have quorum. We have four board members here. We are absent Dr. Hernandez, who is on excused leave from today's meeting. Is there any public comment for items not on the agenda? There being none, let's move to the consent agenda, item three. We have before us the minutes of a variety of meetings, April 17th, April 26th, and May 3rd's special meeting as well. Are there any suggested corrections or clarifications on the minutes?
Move to accept the minutes as filed.
I second that.
Is there any discussion? Further comment? All four?
Aye.
4-1 vote to approve the minutes. Item 4A is the interim administrator's report and financial review. Welcome, Steve, to your first official full-blown meeting, and we're very glad to have you here.
Thank you, President Brown.
I'm sorry, I have a point. That you didn't report out any reportable actions.
At the end of our last closed meeting, we went into an open session meeting at which I reported.
Right, but from the April 17th, April 26th meeting, did we not have a closed session?
I kept careful track because I knew, Iggy, that you would be very careful. And each time we came out of a regular meeting, I made sure we announced reportable action, if any. May we move the agenda, and if, as you peruse, you find we need to return to this to make an additional comment, I shall do.
Okay. Well, thank you, Reverend Gray. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the board for giving me the opportunity to be a service. Around 40 years with a brief 30-year stint in San Luis Obispo in the middle of that. I'm delighted to be back in Cambria. I'm a resident of Cambria again, and I'm delighted to be back here and delighted to have the opportunity, like I said, to be of service to the district. My first regular meeting with a regular agenda. I spoke with Bill briefly prior to the meeting, and I'll try to give as comprehensive as I can report on financial statements, but clearly not completely up to as the administrator, I have spent the last few days familiarizing myself with operations, meeting staff, reviewing financials, reviewing budgets, talking to staff and various board members about issues, concerns. We are scheduling an all-hands meeting that's coming soon. That will give me an opportunity to meet all the staff, or if any of the staff would be on shift simultaneously. Although I think now I have met everybody, I think.
With the exception of some part-time staff, I believe you have met everybody.
Right. Thank you. My impression right out of the gate is that you have a dedicated professional staff, both in the medical field and in the office. I want to thank in particular Heidi, metaphorically, is jumping into stuff, and I'll be relying on Heidi and So to review stuff in the board packets, the interim office director, Tim Bennis, is here as well, to answer any other questions. The reports are, I think, clear on the extended time. Clearly, the one on April 22nd, the incident near Greenbrook, I have spoken with County Emergency Services about needing to develop some formal protocols about how to handle issues that are raised when we cannot physically access the parking. Clearly, a lot of detail on all of the reports themselves, the reports themselves. I find a very detailed activity report regarding the incidents, the explanations. Happy to answer any more questions or turn over to our officer if I can answer them. I have asked Tim to be here on a regular basis as calls permit. What that does mean, of course, is that there has to be two people here with an ambulance. We're going to have a command vehicle that would allow Tim to safely leave the office. And so.
So you said you're ready for questions about what you've covered so far?
Absolutely. Feel free to interrupt me anytime.
Okay, well, so I like the format that's been developed for the transport activity report, because there's a place that says reason for delay. And what I would appreciate is if y'all will start using that. Unless there's a lengthy explanation, might as well just use that space. I guess, Jeremy, you developed it?
Yes.
Okay.
Reason for delay? Put it right
so
there.
So you're getting a partial report this time around, half are missing because we implemented it the last part of last week.
Yeah, the San Simeon part it doesn't have that.
Oh, you right. Yeah. So you want that across all reports?
So the San Simeon incident occurred prior to Jeremy putting the update in the system. So that's why there's nothing in that one, and there's the separate sheet that explains the call.
Right. But anyway, might as well just use it, simplifies it, one less piece of paper.
Yeah. In the future, that's what it'll be.
And okay.
It requires a longer
implementation.
Okay.
Yeah, the scheduling implementation. Right there.
And there should always be a reason for a delay. In other words, can't remember. I don't find that particularly acceptable. And there's one of those. Okay. So now, moving on to another page in the report. It's your vehicle activity report?
Yes.
One of the things that I asked the last administrator to do, and it was never done, was to have not only the current vehicle mileage, but to have a column that says what the previous was.
Okay.
Now, it's not that hard for me to do.
The problem with that is that the report you're looking at is generated by our incident report, and currently the incident report, the way the form is set up on that form, doesn't allow for that to be entered.
Okay.
So we would have to hand write
it. If it is, no problem. But I want to tell you
not necessarily tough, but we can save the entries from what the previous month and have those.
That's all. Yeah, that's all that's required. Now,
it's more of a training thing. It's kind of there already. So
I just want to tell you the reason.
Sure.
So, for example, this morning I sat down, since we've got a new ambulance coming next month, I sat down and said, okay, when are we going to have to replace the box from Unit 18? When are we going to have to replace Unit 16? Because presumably we're replacing Unit 17 with
correct.
The ambulance we get next one. And I think I picked up, Tim, you saying, let's use 220,000 miles. It's kind of a...
That's the average across the board. Some places go more, some places go less. But
so I use that figure. So based on that and the mileage that's being accumulated on, say, vehicle 16, one of the 2008 Sprinters, that we'll have to replace that one in about a year. And also, unit 18, the box is good for, I think you had told us, 20 years.
Yes, that's the average lifespan of the box.
Okay. So, but the chassis will likely have to be replaced in 7 years, so we need to plan for that.
Correct.
And that's what I use the conservative mileage for.
A capital asset replacement of depreciation schedule would ideally be formatted for
sure.
Things like that. And
but anyway,
yeah.
So just, you know, just FYI, that's kind of why I wanted to.
Totally understand. And
okay.
The benefit when we get the new unit also is because that's going to have all the warranty and everything, that'll be a frontline engine or ambulance. So what will happen is 16 will actually drop back into the reserve fleet. So between 16 and 17 being in the reserve fleet, we'll actually buy a little extra time before we have to ultimately replace them.
Good point. Yeah.
So.
Now, one, it might be good to, rather than simply have vehicle mileage, which is useful but obviously doesn't show the public our real purpose or where we're going with this, I like the idea of developing a depreciation and replacement of major asset kind of sheet so that we can track it for what we're really tracking it for rather than raw mileage. It might help the community understand when they hear that we have an ambulance down or whatever, if they should go to our packet, they could get a better sense of what we're
right.
What we're dealing with.
And I think that will probably be included either in the as part of budget documents, as part of quarterly financials, or as part of the year budget. I think month-to-month comparison sometimes can skew something because it's a very busy month, it's a required month, and to try to project from that, it's difficult. So, quarterly, or the mid-year budget, or the annual budget time for that depreciation schedule.
And would you recommend that in lieu of what, this vehicle mileage box, or would you, do people like, do you like
I
the idea of having?
I think it's a very good question, and I'm not sure of the purpose for the vehicle mileage box. What I look at is there is so much data out there, and we can slice it and dice it in an infinite number of ways to present to the board. We want to make sure that it's useful for the board, informative for the public, that we think the art in providing good staff reports is to leave out everything that nobody's going to read, and trying to figure that part out can be very difficult. So we can provide it with tons of data, but nobody reads it, and then we just spend a lot of time. So, I mean, the thing for me, and I can work through on this with property facilities or the plant, is determining exactly what information the board feels is useful for the board on a monthly, quarterly, or semi-annual basis, and what is informative for the public.
We actually just went through that process 2 months ago with Maureen, and the report now
is giving
us what we want, but I think with this vehicle mileage, maybe the best thing is what you just suggested, is projecting based on miles driven when assets will have to be replaced, because that's the only purpose for that entry.
Okay.
After the last couple of months, I felt like we need a sick bay column for where our ambulances are in the hospital.
One of the dangers that could creep in when you are managing assets, it's three or four or five ambulances, whether they're active or in reserve, is you want, because you're balancing mileage between units, the one thing you don't want to do is to have all of a sudden all the units have 220,000 miles on them, and we've got to replace all the units in 1 year, that it's okay to let an old unit naturally age out and replace it, and then the next one naturally age out.
Right.
Okay, and I know that that's easier said than done. There's daily requirements, there's maintenance and service, and things happen, but we need to manage the assets appropriately and not necessarily get everybody at the same level.
Correct. And so in the past, what we've always done is rotated the ambulances through. But unfortunately, both of the Sprinters are well in the 210,000 mileage. So by purchasing the unit that we're getting now, the 2019 Ford Transit, and with Unit 18, there's going to be enough of a gap that I think we'll be able to make that work from this point on. But we're playing catch-up because it wasn't done before.
I understand. Thank you.
Okay, so we'll try to put something together in the depreciation schedule and replacement schedule. Ideally, I mean, if we can get into the board with a year-end closeout of the July meeting, we can do that at that time.
You want to talk a little bit about the finances?
I was just going to ask if we can, if you want, you want to merge it with your finance committee and just
do
the two together.
Yeah, why don't we do it under there? We can pick it up. Okay.
Now, Maureen had a list of things, items she was following. And when I added a few items to it for her last meeting, it ended up being 21 items. So I'll just hand you the hard copy, and hopefully you can find whatever she had on the computer. But that was her last report. And maybe instead of reporting on those things this time,
okay,
you can wait until the next board meeting. Would that be all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Steve, in terms of your report?
I would bring to the board's attention that the Amgen tour is today, that this board discussed billing for that Amgen tour services requested. We took that board direction, negotiated directly with Amgen, made it clear to AMR that all bets were off if we weren't in a position to be able to use the backup ambulance by virtue of some mechanical breakdown. That has in fact occurred, and so we notified Amgen yesterday that we needed both ambulances in the field in the district. Authorized San Luis Ambulance to provide service in our district as a backup for the race. So we're not participating, unfortunately.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. And we'll have a little bit more about some of that on the agenda when we discuss.
Okay.
Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I'm here to answer questions.
Are there any questions for Tim as part of the administrator's report? Thank you.
You have an estimated time of arrival of, I guess, what we'll call Unit 20?
I do not have an estimated time just yet. I'm hoping to hear back this week. I have been in communication with her. We've talked about where radios are going to be placed, where the NARC safe is going to be placed, and stuff like that. Some of the requirements are required during the build. So as soon as it comes off the assembly and heads to paint, we'll actually have a date. When we get the final decals for you guys to approve, I'll have a delivery date at that time because the decal is the last step.
You need our approval on decals.
Barbara expressed that she wanted to see the decals before we approved them. We were taking the Star of Life off and running the stripes down, but she wanted to double check to make sure that that was okay. And if she's okay with us doing that, because that's what I've instructed them to do, then I won't wait until when I see the decals, as long as that's done, then I'll just approve it and we'll just move forward.
I wouldn't want my design interest to get in the way of progress on getting this ambulance.
Okay.
Thank you.
And when the ambulance arrives, will it be in a condition that we can literally put it in service the next day?
Yes, it will be turnkey. When we get it, we'll take delivery of it, we'll do an inspection. They're taking care of all the DMV paperwork before we submitted all of our information to them. They'll submit it to DMV. It comes, we make sure all the lights work, looks pretty. Put all of our medications in it, and it's ready to go. The radios that we are sending them are already pre-programmed, so we won't have to worry about any programming or any
So the only thing you'll have to do is get plates for it.
The plates will probably be here before the ambulance gets here.
Ah, great.
Under the terms of our deal with them, is there a place where that unit should be repaired and maintained?
No, they will honor anywhere that we feel see fit. They request, though, that if it's a manufacturer thing, i.e. with Ford, we take it back to the Ford dealership because it will be covered with the Ford's chassis warranty.
So that's passed over?
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much for everything.
Any other questions?
No, I think it's just fabulous that you did all that work. And when we talked to San Luis Ambulance, they had heard from AMR that they were able to get these Type 2 ambulances, like Sprint, you know, Mercedes Sprinter units, for something in the 80s. But they didn't know if that was outfitted or not. And when I told them that we bought one for 92, they thought that was a great price.
They, unfortunately, Frank is a leader, is subject to leader. That's all he'll ever buy is leader ambulances, and he likes the boxes. So one of the things that San Luis Ambulance does is they buy the chassis and then they have the box completely gone through, all the upholstery's changed and everything else. So, and AMR, I believe they do all their own in-house decals and everything, so that's why they can get them a little cheaper. They do their radio.
No, I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
I think AMR is probably buying.
Yeah,
tens and twenties and thirties.
Yeah, they're buying.
They get volume discount.
Correct.
Which we can never, unfortunately, come close to.
Maybe fortunately, I don't know.
Yeah, or fortunately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. You don't have any questions for us?
No. I'll be over there if you have any more questions.
Thank you very much. So we shall move on to the committee reports, and the first is healthcare advocacy. Lori?
Okay. Okay, healthcare advocacy did not have a committee meeting in April, but I wanted to report on a few of the ongoing activities. As far as community outreach and education, the fall prevention classes are continuing to have good turnout. I think there were over 30 here yesterday. The last class in the series will be next Tuesday. I'll be meeting with Michelle Zulon-Clark at the end of next week's class to discuss potential for other public health education opportunities that the county might be willing to bring to the community. There's also been some discussion of developing an aging-in-place initiative for the community, and this is coming out from a lot of the discussion that we've been having through these classes. So we'll be working with other community providers, working with CAN, working with Cambria Connections, and our health providers, just trying to see how we can network together and make sure that the healthcare district participates in those types of actions. The other thing regarding healthcare services, CHC has added a physician to their clinic, and I'm not sure of the hours that he will be working, but there is a new physician at CHC.
Fridays.
Just Fridays. So, okay, great. Dr. Lewis is planning on signing her permanent contract. She is currently seeing about 10 patients a day and is getting new patients all the time, so she's quite happy here, and we're quite happy that she's happy here.
And Dr. Lewis is with the
FCPP. Okay. Yeah, the new clinic. Regarding doing a healthcare needs survey to see where our status is currently, I will share, and I'll have to share the link, that the County Public Health Agency put out a very detailed report just this last year in 2018 that is reporting the countywide survey of healthcare needs and does a nice comparison between what state needs are as well as national needs are. What the county survey showed pretty much supports what we found in our 2016 survey, that there is a need for more physicians and more healthcare services countywide. So when we are fighting for these services, we're fighting with the entire county, if not the state, and if not nationwide as well. I think we're doing quite well with the addition of Dr. Lewis and the fact that CHC is now bringing in another physician. The one thing I would say about doing a survey now at this time, that if we were to do it to see what satisfaction is, it wouldn't be a true cross-comparison between people who had answered the survey in 2016 till now, because we have no guarantee that everybody who answered the survey in 2016 would also respond. What we do know, and what was a primary concern on the survey, is there was a need for urgent care. If we look at what coverage is, even with the addition of Dr. Lewis and this one physician at CHC, I would still say that urgent care is needed because we have a dearth of coverage between Friday through Monday morning. One thing to consider, and I floated this by Barbara, is that I believe we should go back to Tenet and say, you've got a beautiful facility, including an X-ray machine now, and it would be a shame not to, in some ways, provide urgent care services during Friday through Sunday, if possible. Whether or not they would be open to contracting with another provider or not, I'm not sure. But I know that there's been talk about us looking at obtaining funding to possibly renovate our building. But there's already a facility that's been renovated and currently not in use. So I would suggest that we explore that avenue as a possibility. The other thing is, looking at grants and award funding, I did have the opportunity to meet with Administrator McGrath and discuss that avenue of revenue. And I was delighted to learn that he is a well-experienced and successful grant writer. Yeah.
How'd you get that out of him? That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, anyways, the thought being that what I really wanted to determine is what are the needs, the actual equipment needs, or the capital equipment needs that we have, and maybe targeting those needs initially. I find that if I have something that we actually, that I have a focus for what a grant needs to achieve, it's easier for me to find sources of funding. And what I would like to do is then in the next couple of weeks meet with the administrator as well as Tim and sit down and really discuss what it would mean to say if we wanted to find funding, whether partial or full funding, for the purchase of another ambulance or some of the other equipment that we may be in need of in the near future. And that's pretty much where I am at this point with the committee.
Administrator McGrath, do you think we need a motion on our next month's agenda to support Lori's recommendation that we talk with First California Physician Partners about the concept of the need for urgent care and whether they might be interested in soliciting space needs for that area?
Why don't I work with Director Miller to develop a brief staff report for consideration by this board at the next meeting?
When Lori mentioned the foundation, the grant writing, it made me remember that we were anticipating some feedback from Jeff Minnery about his progress on the foundation.
You're receiving an email for the days out with the update from Jeff Minnery on several items that we're not close enough.
I'm sorry, Ms. Thien.
There'll be no closed session. I would request that the President Gray pull the closed session item off the agenda. That will be replaced by an email from myself or District Council later today with an update on the item and also on the 501c3.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Any other comments or questions for Lori? Excellent progress.
Oh.
Great report.
Thanks.
It's very fun to be able to focus on that aspect of our goals. So,
yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it. Bill.
Finance. I would just update on a couple of items. One, next month we will have the outside auditors here to present the certified statements. We need to finalize those and approve those and get them filed with the state before June 30th. So we've been working with her to do some rewording, and there were a couple of open items that Heidi and her were working on, and we'll have those resolved. Second item is we were looking at insurance coverage and wanted to get some sort of indication. We're currently getting insurance coverage with SDRMA, and the question was, are we getting a good deal? Can we get a better deal? Is it the most cost-effective route to go with? As you know, I contacted an outside insurance broker and worked with them to take a look at our policies, and they wanted to have the ability to go out into the marketplace to get quotes on comparable coverage that we have to just see, you know, can they do a better job, or possibly just affirm that the deal we have with SDRMA is in fact a very good deal and we should stay there. They sent me three applications for different types of coverage, and as I reviewed them towards the idea of completing them, it was obvious to me that a lot of the requirements that they were asking for, we just didn't have in place. And the requirements that the insurers are looking for are a lot of policies and procedures covering different things. For example, one of the things had to do with data security. And we were looking for, did we have coverage for a potential breach? Okay. And they had a lot of questions about, do we have a designated security person? Is there annual security training to the employees? Do the employees routinely change their passwords? Are the changing of the passwords documented? And so on and so forth. Just kind of things we probably do, but maybe don't document them well. Okay? And maybe we do it, but we don't have a written policy to back it up. Okay? And I came to the conclusion that at this juncture in where we are administratively, and we're just not in a position where we can go out with a good-looking application. Because when they say, do you have a policy and procedure on X, you have to attach it. Okay. I spoke with Administrator McGrath about this, and we agreed that what we need to do at this junction is just to back off for a year, that we need to take a good look once he gets settled in with what policies and procedures we have, what policies and procedures maybe we have, but they're not current, and get them current, and where there's gaps, fill them in. Administrator McGrath tells me that California Special Districts Association, one of the benefits we have of being a member is they have model policies that you can have access to. So you're not totally recreating the wheel. You bring, a security policy in, look at it, tweak it, make it our own, okay? And then we have it. And then we just need to set up a calendar to make sure if a decision is made, we change passwords quarterly or semi-annually, whatever the right time is, that it's documented that those things have occurred. And next year, probably in the March, April, May time frame, we can again revisit this issue. And if it makes sense to go out with the application, at least we're ready, we have the proper documentation. Also with that, we had discussed that if we start attending some seminars and different things with the California Special District Association, one of the benefits is we can get a discount on our insurance premiums with SDRMA. And I've asked Administrator McGrath to kind of put together something that would, if we followed it and chose to do this, what would it take to get such a discount? So we're kind of working on both ends. We're not dropping this issue. It's just that we need to realize that we are a small district, and small districts don't have necessarily the luxury of having staff that just write policies and procedures and things like that, but we need to figure out what the balance is there to get the right insurance coverage. So we're working on it. We also have been working on looking at new billing systems. Here in the last month, we had contact with ImageTrend. I attended an online PowerPoint presentation of their billing process, and their billing process is impressive. They're a large organization. They have 20 clients that they do billing services for. They don't have any clients in California, but they also sell billing software, and they have a number of clients in California that use their billing software. So they've, by default, had to be familiar with Medi-Cal because they had to tweak the billing systems that people purchase for the uniqueness of Medi-Cal. Everything in our discussions went very well until it came down to, well, what's it going to cost us? Okay. And they gave us a quote both on a percent of revenue and on a per claim basis, and both of those are at this juncture much higher than we can afford. Okay. We thank them for their quote. We're putting them on hold. We've got another one or two opportunities to look at for comparative billing services. So this is kind of a progress report, okay, that we're still moving down the road on that. And it's an item that we'll have on our next finance committee agenda. The next finance committee will be the 29th of May. And one of the items on our agenda is putting together a proposed budget for next year. And I would ask each board member to send me an email with some sort of estimate of what they need for their own particular committees, that we make sure we can include it in the budget. And then once we finish that, sometime in June, I'd like to have a budget working meeting of the board.
Like a workshop.
A workshop, and I will coordinate that with you, Barbara, when we do that, so we can go over the budget and, as a group, make the decisions of what should be included, what shouldn't be, et cetera, et cetera.
Can I request that any communications that are intended for you from the board members go through me and then presented at the finance committee? That way, we're not going to run into anything that might be construed as a Brown Act, either public support or zero meeting.
I would be more than happy to concur with that. With all of that said, I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the monthly financials for the month of April.
What page would you like us to?
I would like us to focus on this particular page, which I guess is
17.
Is that one on the same?
It's this one on the same.
So page 17 of the board packet.
Yeah, same as that. Talk about revenue for the month. Compared to budget, we were almost $39,000 down in revenue, less revenue. And that was a function of less than budgeted ambulance revenue of $3,570. And then less tax revenue, both for the general tax and the special assessment, $42,000 combined, $42,266. That's kind of the bad news for the month in terms of revenue. But we did have on a comparative basis, there's a little bit of a timing difference. While we had $42,000 less of tax revenue this month, we had $18,000 more of tax revenue than we budgeted last month. So it's a little bit of a timing difference. I'm not concerned on where we are for the full year with the tax revenue. I think it's going to come pretty close to what we had budgeted. But it's just the way the tax revenue comes in that we really can't control. The Monterey contract, we had budgeted only one trip in the fourth quarter of the fiscal year, and we put that in the month of April. Well, we didn't have any cash receipts for transports in the month of April from the Monterey contract, which is the bad news. The good news is, though, we did have six trips in April up into the Monterey area, and we billed $9,000 in April for those trips, and we should be getting that revenue hopefully here in the month of May. We got a payment on our GEMT of $12,225. This was for the 2017-2018 fiscal year. We still have the current year to bill, and that will be billed, I guess, at the end of the year when we get the opportunity to find out the results of the year. This is an issue. The GEMT is good news and bad news. This is the good news, that we got $12,000. The bad news is that we're still working through some payback for prior years that they had audited and found some issues. And one of the items on the Finance Committee agenda for the 29th is the GEMT, so we can get a good look at where we are and what we owe back, so we can make some decisions related to next year's budget in terms of that. The next area is labor costs, and we were $6,632 over budget collectively for all the accounts. The main cause of that was the payout of the previous interim administrator for some benefits that she was due, and that created that accounted for $3,000 plus of our $6,000 variance. But other than that, there was nothing really of concern there. There were some overages in full time, or some savings in full time that were offset by additional costs in part time, and that's just the natural process of our business. Down in other costs, we were unsure when we were going to ultimately be billed for the election process. We had budgeted $16,000 in the month of April. We actually received that bill earlier, and in March we paid the bill, and it was $12,000. So this is a timing difference, but it's a kind of a good timing difference, because we had budgeted $16,000 and we only paid $12,380. We had facilities and repair. We had a very good positive variance there. We had budgeted $12,000 for a number of facility-related projects. As you know, a number of months ago, when we determined that we needed to replace an ambulance, we also made a decision to defer or cancel some of the facility-related projects, and this positive variance is the function of that decision that we made back then to cancel the projects.
But it was also the result of receiving a fire-safe council grant to pay for the tree trimming. Isn't that true, or was that last month?
It was either last month or the month before, but you're correct. We were able to do something, but we didn't have to pay for it. Down in maintenance and of the equipment, we had some negative variances. The big negative variance was driven by the replacement of the transmission on number 16, unit 16.
Unintended, you said driven by?
Driven by.
Yeah, unintended.
Unintended. Of $7,677. That was the big item there. And that was offset by the quarterly payment that we had to make on the, I guess it was unit 18, of $7,983. We actually had that included in the month of May. So again, that was kind of a timing difference. The money, of course, was in the budget, was just in a different
so we'll have a positive variance
next month in that category. And the last item of note is the contingency reserve. In April, we had budgeted moving $30,000 into the contingency reserve, and we actually did that. We did that at the end of the month. We did that on April 30th, and because it was required a wire transfer, and it occurred after the close of business for the month of April, for the day of April 30th. While the transfer was in fact made, it will be reflected in the month of May. So it was done. And that covers the highlights of what happened in the month of April from a financial standpoint.
Any questions for Bill?
Okay. I do
have one.
Okay, go ahead.
it's not really a question. It is a question. We talked a few minutes ago about the desire to create a some sort of a maintenance and repair schedule or form mm-hmm. for the equipment. Should we create something like that for maintenance and repair of our facilities? I worry because I think we did the right thing by postponing the pavement, but in my time with the board, we've often deferred things on our buildings and out of a need to always have something else done was a higher priority, and it's easy for our buildings to go into disrepair. I'm thinking it might be of value to really take a hard look at what needs to be done and at least set some sort of a schedule for it.
To that, I expect we will have a property and facilities committee meeting after June 3rd, but before our next board meeting. And I think in that property and facilities committee meeting, we should, in fact, cover known projects like the paving, like reviewing the CHC occupied Suite D to see what needs aren't being met that need to be met, and to look at how we plan to utilize the building that's marked 2535. And so I think that discussion should occur then. We should, it would be a little late for the May 29th meeting that the Finance Committee takes on, but it should be in time for the workshop that Bill just said he's contemplating to then put in an estimate. And I talked yesterday with Steve McGrath about some of this stuff, and he has a notion of how to go about it, and I agree with his approach, and that is to, for example, hire someone in San Luis that he knows, a firm that he knows in San Luis, to give us a specification for the parking lot. We also talked in past board meetings about hiring a building inspector to come in and look at all our property, and I think the estimate was less than $1,000 to do that. So from that, we can develop what we need to do and when. When I talked to Steve yesterday about what I thought it might cost to fix the parking lot, he said, well, you're off by a factor of at least two. But
In which direction?
wrong direction. But on the other, there's offsetting numbers that have been plugged into the budget. And so Mr. Rice, Director Rice, will report in the next 2 months how, oh my goodness, we've got another pickup of, you know, some amount of money because facilities projects weren't done. And it's really, I don't think, unlike the roof repair that had to be done last year, there isn't anything critical that I know of that's being deferred. There certainly is no intention on my part as the chair of the Property and Facilities Committee to defer anything. We're just taking a more cautious fiscal approach.
I like the idea of creating a schedule, sort of a planned schedule, the way we might do with our homes, where you, you know, you're coming up to 10 years and it's time to paint, that kind of thing, which we may not always be able to fill, but certainly also once we develop a community donation vehicle, some of those things may be of appeal to someone who has a particular interest in that kind of
thing. Or with Dr. Hernandez and Dr. Hoyer. Mm-hmm. Working on grants.
It's probably too late for the 1920 budget. It can be added at a later date. Would be a 5-year capital improvements plan, CIP program, and it becomes a sort of wish list, and it gets budgeted on an annual basis. What the district can, what the board chooses to prioritize, what the district can afford, and then at least identifies those things that are needed, and then every year drops off, and year gets added.
Sure.
That would be a way of tracking the facilities and equipment in the immediate future.
It's also very transparent to the community because they may drive by and have a concern, see something, say something, and they will have a document where they can see that we are looking at the things that they see.
And the last item I have is to talk a little bit about our bank accounts. Okay. I didn't even want to ask you to help me with this. We have a number of bank accounts at Rabo. We have a operating account, we have a payroll account, we have a ambulance revenue account, and then we have an investment account.
An investment account is the Bank of America.
We also, and all of those accounts, we are signatories on as directors, and they are under the auspices of our employer identification number, EIN. I recently learned that we had that there are two other accounts that are under our employer identification number that are active. And Heidi, I believe both of those accounts are at Grabo also?
Yes. Okay. No. One's at Rabo Bank, one's at Bank of America.
One's at Bank of America. One of those accounts is the crisis intervention fee. It has about $2,500 in it, give or take. And it was an amount of money that over the years was built, I guess, a combination of items, of monies that may have been allocated by the board in the budget process for them, plus maybe donations that were received by people in the community.
That's incorrect.
Okay.
So the money, we can get into this if you want to. I did not bring the file. I didn't know we were going to speak about this.
Right.
But there is a file that I do have. CAT was started, LSA, the AIDS. There was always money on paper. It's just a piece of paper on the budget that was for CAT. And I have printed out what was used for that money, things like pagers. CIT needed pagers a year. There is one check that was written to CIT. I'm trying to remember in the 07 or 08, for $1,650. At that time, it was a huge, thriving organization with probably maybe 30 people, and there was an agreement that they would be paid a stipend for going to meetings. And at that time, I think they had maybe two meetings a year, but most of the people didn't even cash the checks that were written to them by the then person who was taking care of the finances. I believe that was Carla Clark. The money was put back. The rest of the money was donations from CIT members over the course of 10, 15 years, pancake breakfasts, working at a booth out for the July, etc. There has been some question about that money and whose money it is. There is a file that does have a letter from both Marianne Mullen, who was the last director of CIT, and from Carla Clark, who was the last official person who took care of the money. We also have the checkbook and the deposit slips. So that is pretty much the history of CIT. Other than that $1,650, no money was ever given to CIT, but things were purchased, as I said. One was pagers. I can't remember what the other two things were, but they were small amounts.
Heidi, so this, I'm sorry.
Into that account.
Was the $1,600 check written by the Cambria Community Healthcare District?
The Healthcare District wrote a check to CIT because CIT members had an agreement that they would be paid a certain dollar amount, a stipend amount for attending meetings, for every meeting that they attended. So at that time, they had excellent record keeping, lots of people, and I believe, and you'd have to ask Carla Clark or Marianne, but I believe they came to the district with a list of people and meeting attendance, how many meetings they attended, and then the district wrote a check for the meeting attendance per the agreement. But again, most of the people, when they were written their checks out of the CIT account, didn't even cash the checks. They didn't want the money. So the money, or they donated it back. That's something that you would have to, and Carla Clark says she's very happy to come to a meeting as is Marianne Mullen. You'd have to ask them because I was not part of CIT.
My other question is, my understanding is that nowadays, if you want to get a bank account and you it is not in your personal name, you have to have a 501c3 state and federal number in order to get that account. Having been recently working with the Cambrians for Aquatics, I've been living this through Tom and kind of see the steps. It sounds like this account was created before the banking system required 501c3. And so that is another fact to be noted, because it's a bit unusual. Now, you cannot get a bank account without it.
If I may suggest that either the Finance Committee agendize this for discussion, so that any members of the public, especially because we're talking about CIT funds, any members of the public might know about the discussion and be able to participate.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay, I agree. It's just, if you will, something that has been there, and I think it needs to be dealt with one way or another.
Absolutely, I would agree. It
probably needs to be dealt with. And it would be good to be prepared, because there will be questions of law.
That's it.
Thank you very much. Thank you for all your hard work.
I thought there was a second account.
There is a second account. This is kind of just an FYI for the board. A second account under our EIN, and we are not signatories on it, meaning the board members are. And what is the name of the account, Nadia?
So, again, about 40 years ago. For those of us who have been here so long, let's see. The Cambria Ambulance Association opened an account, and at that time, of course, there was no issue that things were not this convoluted, and it was under the Cambria Healthcare District's EIN. It has never had any signatories from any board members, etc. It does have bylaws. Every single pay period, all part-time and full-time employees, now we used to put $20, but now we put $5 in to cover our expenses, condiments. We've given out a scholarship to a student at Coast Union. We did a barbecue. So, again, I agree that does need to be dealt with. We ourselves have decided as a group that we are no longer going to be putting any money into that, and we're going to be moving that money to our own account. So that's something that the district will have to be concerned about. It's not that money.
Roughly how much is, are we talking about, like $300?
Oh, no, it's more than that. But it's association money. It has nothing to do with the district. None of the money came from the district. Also,
again, I think it's tiny.
When you say association money,
It's an employee association.
So that employee association still exists?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, just, this is probably, you know, if I understood it, the Cambria Employee Association functioned as a represented group, and that representation then went to the SEIU.
No, that's Cambria Paramedic Association.
Oh, okay.
That's the Cambria Ambulance Employee Association, two separate entities.
And what was the purpose of the first association? What was
the Cambria Ambulance Employee Association, the one that we put our money into? Because the group many, many years ago, prior to my even getting here for 35, 40 years, they put on barbecues for the community. They created and sold T-shirts. We gave money for scholarships. It's a way that not the district, but the people who actually work in the field can create some sort of relationship with the community, which is what was always done. But at this point, we have decided that we're going to close that account, move the money out, and that will be the end of that account. Also, something
important
else.
Important to note, I think that no district funds went into this. This was all employee funds.
Sorry?
And the expenditure of those funds were very
so you're just going to distribute the funds to the current employees?
No, it sounds like the association is going to set up their own bank account. And then we can close this bank account, and then the association will fund that account and distribute from that account as they choose through their own bylaws or procedures.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Heidi. Iggy.
We did not have a property and facilities committee meeting this month, but as the board had directed, we did auction off the 1999 Ford Expedition, and I just want to read into the record a memo that I created regarding that, and then I'm going to hand the memo and the backup for whatever archive file you have on the expedition. Okay, so at the December 2018 Board of Directors meeting, the board voted unanimously to have the CCHD 1999 Ford Expedition returned to the district headquarters at 2535 Main Street in Cambria. It had been utilized by the operations director primarily for community, and the board decided that that was not an appropriate use of public property. The board further decided that the utilization of this vehicle for district operations would be monitored through the end of March 2019, and then at its April meeting, the board would decide whether it was justified to keep the vehicle or dispose of it as excess to the district's operational needs based on demonstrated use. At its April 17, 2019 meeting, the board voted unanimously to direct the administrator to dispose of the vehicle per district bylaws. A public auction was decided upon. The decision was made to have no reserve price, and the vehicle was to be sold as is, where it is. However, district personnel, namely, I think, Tim.
Only guilty.
Who apparently pleads guilty to it, did remove the emergency light bar, plugged the wiring hole in the roof, and removed the most distinctive of the decals showing, quote, Cambria Community Healthcare District, end quote, and a portion of the district's logo. The vehicle still bore the distinctive green decal stripes, and the roof antennae were left in place. In order to remove the remaining decals, the body shop had been contracted, and I had obtained two quotes, and the lowest estimate obtained for that work was $760, quoted by Team Auto Collision in Paso Robles. I'm not counting the amount of time that would have been required to, you know, get the ambulance over there and so on, but just $760 to remove the remaining decals. The Kelley Blue Book value of the vehicle was placed in the range of $1,005 to $2,064. the former value representing the expected trade-in price if you traded it in on another vehicle, and the latter the private party sale price. And both of these are like medians of those, so it's like an average of a range. For a vehicle equipped as the district's was and in fair condition. Considering the additional cost of decal removal, the range had to be adjusted to $245 on the low end to $1,304 on the high end. This did not include the cost of passing a smog test as required by the California DMV. It was decided to open the auction at a minimum bid of $500. Shortly after the auction started at 10 a.m. on May 14th, 2019, Dave Gerber of Gerber Automotive in Cambria bid $1,100, and the other bidder present, a Mr. Evans, if I remember correctly, present, elected not to bid higher. Mr. Gerber offered to accept the vehicle as is and offered to perform the smog test in satisfaction of the DMV's requirement. The offer was accepted, and Mr. Gerber paid the district administrative manager $1,100 in cash. In my opinion, as chair of the Property and Facilities Committee, the sale by auction of the aforesaid CCHD asset is carried out for a fair and reasonable price. So I'm giving the administrator the Kelly Blue Book values, as well as the two quotes that I obtained for decal removal. And the quotes also included additional amounts for light bar removal and so on. And I just ignored that in the calculation of what the true receipt of the vehicle was. That's it.
Well, any comments from the public? I failed to request specifically for the committee reports any public comment.
In regards to the ambulances, I know that you guys have discussed replacing Unit 17. I want to try and I'm going to fight this one or explain. I think that we need to keep both the Sprinters at this time as backups. As soon as 20 comes in, I don't think that we need to eliminate one of them. I think at this time we should keep both of them since we've invested a large amount of money to get them both running. They're both running well at this time. I think we should make sure that we have everything in place, hang on to them as backup units, utilize them for events like the Ambien Tour, the Best Buddy Ride, standbys, as backup units. Because if we were to get rid of one and only have one as a backup unit, we run into the same problem we would today with the Ambien Tour. If we had two backup units, we could still participate in the Ambien Tour, we could still make our requirements, and we have the ability to put that ambulance in service if need be. It's paid for. We spent a lot of money to keep them on the road, and at this time they're running good, so I don't see a reason to take half a decent ambulance and get rid of it right away. That's the only thing that I wanted to add.
Thank you. Any questions for Tim?
I don't think that's a bad idea. But the next time that, let's say, on Unit 17,
right,
you have something like a transmission that needs to be...
Then it would go, and then I would opt at that time to say, please, let's get rid of it.
Sure.
But, I mean, right now...
Just put that caveat, if there's any major repair or a door falls off because...
Of rust or something. Which is also why the antenna stayed on Unit 10, the top, because they were actually rusted to the top of the roof. Removing them would have caused significant structural or cosmetic damage and possibly damage to the roof. So we left them in place because they're not leaking, so we didn't want to generate a leak.
I'd like to thank Iggy very much for taking on this this challenging job and succeeding, and just appreciate him doing that. Let's move on to item 5, regular business. And we have just one item in regular business. That's an item that I put on the agenda. And it's fitting to talk about it today because it's the day of the Amgen tour. Soon, Highway 1 will be harder to cross.
If I may,
I'm sorry.
Correct, was the Second Amendment agenda distributed included the second item of the regular business, appointment of an ad hoc search committee for recruitment of the new general manager, new administrator.
Thank you very much. I am working off my previous agenda. Thank you.
And I had,
thank you. And I had seen this. However, this is the proper item to be discussing now, if I'm correct. Right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
The rest of the discussion, rate setting issues and questions posed by county EMS, possible.
Thank you.
There's no staff associated with this.
So the question, as we began to deal with the opportunity posed by the Amgen tour, the question came up about who controls our rate setting and what is a standby. And through the process, I think we were able to, I kind of wanted to discuss this with the whole board so that we have some known history moving forward, everybody understands sort of what the dialogue was like, and Administrator McGrath may have quite a bit to add as well because he participated later after I initially got involved. There were a couple of days of negotiation before we had an interim administrator fully in place, so there was a bit of a handoff there. But basically the way I see it is that we have a standby rate which is for a certain type of standby, that we haven't well-defined standby. Because when we leave the county, when we drive many miles north or south or wherever we might go on a particular assignment, and it involves a great deal of time and it involves more complexity, it's no longer a standby. There needs to be another word. It's a go-to or an event coverage or something different than just a simple standby. And so that's one point I think we need to make, is that when we put on the agenda in the future a look at what our current rates are and how we charge, we may need another term that allows us to fully negotiate based on what's being asked of us. And in fact, we've done this in the past without having it on our rate sheet. For example, Best Buddies has been a complex event for us many times, involving a couple of days, several ambulances, different crew configurations, and we have been paid not based in any way really on the hour, but on the total complex set of activities, as I understand it. Nonetheless, our rates are not approved by the Board of Supervisors. They are approved by our own community through our health district process. We do have an MOU with the Board of Supervisors, but it does not include our rate setting, and that's an important thing for us all to know. In the course of the discussion that I was able to have with various people from the county, one individual, Vince Perucci, expressed to me that we have a $200 charge for non-residence fee, and that he in particular does not like that fee. He thinks that it's unfair to the community. So I thought I should tell the board that, and that when we take a look at our rate setting, that should be a consideration as well, since he gave us that feedback.
Can I interject something?
Sure.
Clearly, I can understand why we have a non-resident fee, because fully, let's say, the math in my head, but let's just leave it that about two-thirds of our revenue comes from the taxpayers in our district, and only a third comes from ambulance transport. I think it's fully appropriate that we have a non-resident charge. I don't know how the rest of the county operates, whether they impose a tax for San Luis Ambulance, but them being a private ambulance service, I highly doubt that there is a county EMS charge, except possibly just for the EMSA structure, you know, the infrastructure, and maybe Vince's salary and so on and so forth. Maybe that's paid for. But nothing else. So why shouldn't we have that kind of charge? And he takes exception to it because maybe he just doesn't fully, well, he maybe hadn't thought about the fact that the non-residents are using a resident-funded ambulance service. So I just wanted to put my two cents in regarding that and make sure that all directors, you know, you probably all thought the same thing anyway, but I just want to put that in the record.
We have not taken a look at our rates for a couple of years, so it may be something that the Finance Committee wants to look at in the near future. That would be up to Bill. I think the overall the discussion was helpful because there were some misconceptions, I think, on the county side about what a health district is and about how to whom we report and on what issues we report to the county and what issues we don't report to the county. Obviously, our relationships with the county at every level are very important to us. But I do think, personally, I'm speaking just for myself, that the ability of the health district to negotiate rates for an event, especially an out-of-county event that is complex and potentially expensive, that our first obligation is to our community to make sure that we charge enough to cover our costs so that our community doesn't end up paying for an event to which we an event we support, and that structure as a state agency as opposed to being a part of a county agency is important. Secondly, we are an odd duck, and it's important that we realize we're an odd duck in this county. There's San Luis Ambulance and there's us. And San Luis Ambulance is a private company that reports to the Board of Supervisors and has to have their rates approved by the Board of Supervisors, and we do not. So I just wanted to kind of lay that out so that we all know it.
So you're not asking for any action on the part of the Board at this point?
No, the only action is that the Finance Committee consider rate revision in the future.
Okay.
Do you want to add that to the? No, I think we should wait. We have enough on the 29th of May agenda.
Is there any public comment? I should have asked for that too. Thank you very much. Any agenda items for? Oh no! I really don't want this, and I really do want it. Actually, I'm so sorry. Item number 5B, we have been asked to set up a committee to search, an ad hoc search committee. I would like to chair that committee, and I'm interested to hear who would like to join that committee. This committee would be working with Steve to, as I understand it, Steve, would you like to describe exactly what you see the committee doing?
Absolutely. Thank you, President Gray. The district does not currently have a permanent administrator and is recruiting for the position. I joined the district on May 7th, and one of my primary tasks being to assist the board in recruiting a permanent administrator. In order to do that, we recommend that the board president appoint two directors to a special committee and a search committee, conditionally appoint a director to chair the committee. Such a committee would not be subject to Brown Act provisions because the committee would disband the appointment of a permanent administrator. I would like to point out that there is a section of the bylaws that addresses the development of committees that include the entire section in the staff board of policy implications. I would point out that it does say, however, that the president is not permitted to chair any committee except the executive. So if the president wishes to appoint himself to the committee, the need to appoint another person who would be willing to serve as chair of the committee.
That's actually one of my favorite bylaws, because I feel like it helps spread the power of the presidency, if you will, more fairly among the other directors. So I'm totally behind that. So what I would like to ask is if anyone would like to be the chairman of the committee.
Well, I have a question. What I'm confused about, maybe I'm just too dumb to understand what you're saying, Steve. Is this committee going to have two members plus yourself, or three members plus yourself?
Committees are comprised of two members of the board and get staff support. And I recommend that in this instance, the staff support be from the interim administrator.
Okay, so what does that have to do with the Brown Act? Because you're not filing the Brown Act because you only have two board members involved.
But it's the Brown Act that specifically describes the composition of a committee. Standing committees are subject to all the provisions of the Brown Act.
Oh, with regards to
ad hoc committees are not thus constrained.
I'm more than happy to participate. I don't know if anybody else is.
Thank you, Iggy.
Thank you for your service.
So Iggy, you would have to be willing to be the chair.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yes.
Well,
does that require a vote to do this? Or
yes,
just
I put in the staff report, and I have to give the wording of a potential motion for the ad hoc search committee and appoint directors Feroff and Gray. The committee will direct Federoff to serve as chairman and administrator and draw the staff support. That would be a motion that the director so chose to make.
I'd like to make a motion that the president create an ad hoc search committee and appoint Director Federoff as chairperson and Director Gray to the committee, along with Interim Administrator McGrath as staff support. This would be the ad hoc committee to search for and identify a permanent administrator for the district.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Any discussion or questions? Any public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
4-0. Thank you very much. Items for next month that you want to be sure are included. Obviously, these items listed are not the only items that can be added during the month, but it's nice to get them down now.
Presentation of the 2018-19 audited financial statements. 2017-18 financial statements.
17-18.
Okay. And
Is this for GEMT or the audit?
No, no,
it's
for the
audit. It's 18.
17-18.
Oh, it is 17. Oh. We're here. Okay. All right, got it.
And also presentation of the proposed budget, operating budget for fiscal year 2019-20.
I was wondering if the committee chairs might be willing to provide a brief review of their goals and objectives as sort of a mid-year look at.
That's fine.
You kind of do that every month, but it seems like it would be a good thing to do. Anything else anyone has on their mind at this time?
Will we be ready, Bill? Do you think we may be ready to present an alternative billing?
We won't know that until the 29th.
Okay, so we should wait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got a presentation of 2017-18 audit results, presentation of 2019/20 budget, mm-hmm. and a presentation by committee
chairs
of progress toward set goal achievement, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Remember now, just because it's taking a little extra time to save company
money. It gives us time to think.
All right, so we're not having a closed session?
No, we do not need closed session, so we are adjourning. We are now formally adjourned.
Okay.
1:30.
Steve, I have a question for you.